Welcome to the Cheltenham School Board Meeting Podcast, online at www.cheltenhamlocal.org or at www.cheltenham.fm.
Cheltenham School Podcast, Finance Committee Meeting, Part 2 of 2 Parts, February 2, 2016.
So, if answer your question, I'd go back and think about that. And I think that's why the special ed piece is extremely important, because it becomes a regular ed issue as well.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. A second question. When I look at this list, I mean, it seems like everything it should be number one.
Yes.
And so when we're looking at, you know, the practical side of this, which is a budget and going back to our community and trying to justify another tax increase, are there ways in which you could envision maybe prioritizing or phasing in? I mean, it seems like all of these are important, obviously, and way overdue. So I guess my question is, if we couldn't do all of these in 1 year, or we couldn't do all of these, if we couldn't manage a finite term of the year for all of these, are there certain ones that you think we need to be looking at first?
Yeah, and jotting down as you were talking about that, how would I prioritize that? There are five circles of knowledge that I think we need to focus on moving forward. And I think we have the time that we can say 5 years from now, we want every single teacher or educator in Cheltenham to have X number of hours of professional learning experiences in these five core domains. I think with in conversation with union leadership and support, that we can embed those in some of our professional development days and other activities. So the literacy across the curriculum is paramount as a priority in terms of helping teachers understand that literacy doesn't happen in language arts. That's paramount. The conversation around cultural proficiency and social cultural identity, understanding students' perspective and what they bring into the classroom, what we bring into the classroom as teachers, and defining expectations is extremely important. I think that the response to intervention has to be that, has to be an integral part, and the universal design for learning. So my vision is, how do we develop a five-year professional development sequence where teachers are rotating through those modules? If you go back to your graduate days where during the semester you took five courses, X number of hours, next semester you took another five. What we're doing is we're taking five courses, and what we're saying is you're gonna take level one of that course this year. Next year, it's the same five courses, but you're taking level two. The year after that, it's the same core concepts, but you're taking it at a higher proficiency level until we can say our teachers are extremely proficient in what we believe to be lifelong practices, regardless of what Harrisburg decides to do with SLOs, teacher effectiveness, keystones, graduation rates. They can do whatever they want up there. But it's not going to change what we believe to be core conversations within our district. So those four are extremely important, and I think we can manage those based on the professional development schedule.
Can I piggyback on that question? With that thought in mind, it would be really helpful for me, at least, to have kind of a phase one, phase two, because it sounds like some of these are phase two as opposed to phase one. So not necessarily finite for the next year. I'm looking at the four that you just identified, that would be phase one with some associated costs, and then phase two with some associated costs. That would be helpful for me to visualize what that impact would be, if that makes sense. I mean,
sure.
So that would give us a sense of your priorities. how we could phase those priorities and what the associated cost would be for phasing that.
So for example, that's a good point, and we'll do that. Phase one for professional learning communities, the intent was every single administrator, along with 2 to 3 teachers, will get professional development before June of 2016, phase one. Phase two happens over the summer, where we are taking, instead of sending out 60 teachers, we are bringing in a consultant into the district. We're going to do 3 days over the summer, and now we have additional teachers with the added cost. So I can put that in other areas. Phase one, for example, for the assessment design conversation, the board has been approving a large number of our educators going to that standard-based grading assessment professional development here in Philadelphia. That's phase one, getting a core group of teachers understanding the language. With a phase two is how do we then spend some additional time over the summer helping them reinforce that so that when those professional learning days happen in October, in December, and in the following days, those teachers are leading that conversation with their colleagues. Cultural proficiency phase one, and I'll put this just to give you examples and I'll give that to you, is that in my experience, if we don't have a group, a core understanding of cultural competency at the administrative level, it's going to crash and burn if they don't have a good understanding of how to facilitate that conversation. So what is happening? We are providing training for all of our administrators in the building, so they have a good understanding of that work and how to lead it. Over the summer, we are bringing in 5 teachers from each school who will go through 4 days of extensive support on how to engage in that conversation. When they come back in the fall, phase two would be how do we create a professional learning calendar so that when we have a team meeting, how do we infuse that in our conversations that we have for an hour and talk about what does cultural competency look like at our grade in our classroom. So I can put those together to give a more sense of phase one, phase two, and some will lead into each other as they go in and out of the process.
And 2 other related questions. We have the strategic plan implementation, which again is a moving target. In terms of timing, we know that the final plan will be presented to the board in May or June,
yes,
which will presumably be after we have to adopt our budget. So how are we going to evaluate, for purposes of the 2016-2017 budget, the plan's impact when we won't have adopted the plan budget?
Well, phase one of any strategic plan is prototyping and is researching. I'll give you an example. There's been a large conversation in this community, and based on the data we collected, that many individuals are extremely interested in a project-based way of assessing students and wanted a lot more hands-on interdisciplinary conversation where how do we combine social studies, biology, or the sciences, and language arts together into a comprehensive transfer of knowledge so there's not individual coursework and silos. And we know that there are places that are doing that very well. Part of the strategic plan in phase one is, do we have enough professional development dollars? Maybe not send them to all corners of the earth, but to be able to send a core group of teachers to down the street or across state lines to say, here's a school that is modeling this extremely well. What can we learn from that? And then put dollars aside to say, could we prototype this within that year? Could we take a small cohort of teachers and have them think differently about how do they combine those 3 courses together in a meaningful way. So phase one is really our best educated guess with the budget in terms of, we know a lot of people are gonna do some, are interested in some really bold ways of thinking. And that's gonna require us go out and find out where that is happening. And we're gonna have to have the funds in order to send those individuals. But we also wanna be able to have the opportunity so that if they're ready, in January of 2017 to say, you know what, we went out in September, October, November, we really think we can pilot this for the second semester to the board. And we think that we'd like to come back and be able to say, we can probably move forward with a larger pilot the following 17-18 school year.
So I guess as part of that, we would have to have some idea of a placeholder number that we're going to be building into the 2016-17 budget for that early phase, because there will be cost, real cost associated with that. And so since the plan will be adopted by the board after we adopt the budget, I think we realistically need to put in some placeholder dollars for that planning phase of the plan.
I want to share with you that I'm not sure what the formula is. Mm-hmm. I did know that previous experiences, when we sat with our directors and our supervisors, and we said, we don't know what the outcome of the strategic plan will be. What we do know is that people want to think differently, and they want to elevate the district in new ways of thinking and doing. And we had asked each department to take a look at their budget, create a line item for strategic implementation, and say, ideally, what are your thoughts about what that looked like if you needed to send the science teachers to A, B, C, or D with regards to that? What if we wanted to create an assessment protocol and go out with Panorama Ed to help collect data? How much would that be? Which was, quite honestly, was being fleshed out as we were going through the budget process anyway, because that information was coming a lot earlier than it is right now. So we had some ideas across the board. So we can try to figure out how we can do that.
And then my last question in terms of timing is that the next financial affairs meeting is in March. And so between this meeting and March, beyond kind of getting the phases one and two and the associated costs with the placeholder for strategic plan implementation, I would like to see kind of, does that also, the phase one, phase two, the priorities, is that going to be equal to 2.4%? Or are we looking at something that we can look at less than 2.4%? I mean, right now we have a budget built with all these priorities that would go up to 2.4%. And I think what you were asking was, could you prioritize what's here in a way that would be less than 2.4%?
For us to review.
I mean, there are consequences for that.
But I want to share with this board that if you take a look at my goals and what we want to move forward with, there's implementation and things we have to begin to have conversations about, because we can't wait till September of 2016 to have those conversations and then think about implementing them in the following budget. So I understand that, but we'll try to put a priority list together of what is neat, what we believe are our core areas, which I'm having difficulty wrestling with, because I think
the priority is that I just want to be able to look at a full budget and have the options and obviously the consequences.
Yeah.
To make a decision as a board member.
What I will do is in talking with other districts who've implemented a universal design for learning, how much was that from beginning to end? For a district who decided they wanted to go to an official RTII model, what was the cost of that over the course of 3 years? So I can give you some, I'll provide some of those projections based on neighboring districts who have implemented some of those, and then we'll figure out to some extent. Obviously, we can't do everything in one calendar year, you know, can't have a 9.8% budget increase to do everything, right? But I think there's opportunities, if I may, to think about, and maybe it'll come up in terms of offsetting some of that with our fund balance and saying, well, maybe we do a little bit more if we tackle the board's willing to look at our fund balance and pull some money from there to really get this engine moving as quickly as we possibly can to do some of those, do some of those things.
Great. Mr. Acker.
Yeah, I want to start by asking a couple of questions on the presentation. Just want to make sure the definitions are all the same. You talk on, you talk in the key drivers for budget development on the revenue side, talk about decline in county assessment. What does that mean?
That means we get certified assessment on the real estate assessment in our township every year. Historically, over the last about 4 to 5 years, that has decreased, it's gone down, which takes away from, if we don't raise taxes and our assessment goes up, then it's going to bring in and generate more tax money. If your assessment goes down, it takes away from that money.
Thank you. That's what I thought. So basically, the past 5-6 number of years, however, the assessment of properties in our township have gone down, and the assessment of the properties in our township are very much the basis for the greatest percentage of our income. You said in the presentation, Marseille, that there seems to be a bubble in the 10th grade of enrollment. That it seemed to be pretty consistent up to the 10th grade, and all of a sudden there was, did I hear that correctly?
No, I apologize if I said that. What I said that, out of all of the fluctuations in terms of enrollment up or down, the 10th grade had the biggest margin from what was projected and what actually is. Numbers went up and down based on the projections. Yes.
I'm just trying to figure out in that context how the numbers in 10th grade go up disproportionately in from the projection.
Did 9th grade go down?
9th grade went down.
It's not students actually passing instead.
So no, I'm just wondering if there is, if we have analyzed it to the point where we can say that for some reason, and we've seen this historically, where maybe a great number of people will send their kids to private parochial schools up to a certain point and then put them in public schools.
Yeah.
And is that happening in the 10th grade, or are there other dynamics?
That's a good question, I don't know. What I do know is when I was looking at fluctuations, which grades had the biggest fluctuation, and 10th grade was one. When I looked at fluctuation, in the elementary, Cheltenham Elementary had the highest fluctuation in terms of what was actually projected for this year and what we currently have.
Okay.
Yes, it's higher.
By
50 students.
I would be interested if this is a trend in 10th grade, if we could figure out why that's happening, because that could be significant in terms of what we could expect would be required of our high school going forward.
Yeah.
Especially when we talk about everything from remediation to all of the things that are expensive.
Even though the overall projections for the high school were minus 30 students less than what they actually projected.
Right.
So overall, the high school is coming in at 1392. The projections had indicated much higher. And if you remember, the projections used a low, medium, and high range. And I think that the consultants kind of went down the middle and used the medium as their target.
And just a quick observation before I go on to my next question. In the expenditures, the benefits are going up at a rate that is far in excess of 10 times what salaries are going up. That is, I think you know some of the reasons for that, but that is huge. And since we are approaching negotiation time, I think that is a figure we can't ignore. That's just way, way out of range. And
just to follow up on that, if you, everybody, oh, we got to hire this new custodian for $40,000. Well, it's not $40,000.
Right.
It's $40,000 plus 30, and fees is going to be 30% in 16-17. People have to understand that. That's like another $12,000. Then you got $20,000. Now, all of a sudden, a $40,000 job is $72,000. A $100,000 job is $150,000. So what you're saying, there's where your expenditures are getting there.
And it's always been, well, it's always been that way, but I took a quick look at this, and I thought I was seeing things. That it is literally, I don't know, 12 times, 13 times the increase in benefits than there was in salaries.
Healthcare.
Pardon me?
Healthcare.
What doesn't matter what it is, it is. This has to do with, we always talk about relating things back to the strategic plan, and since we are in the kind of the embryonic stage together, our next strategic plan for the projecting out for 5 years, one of the things that troubles me in looking at all of this in total is that we have the most significant source of income is declining, and yet we're looking at programs and expenditures which are, by any analysis that I can see of, are and will be increasing. And there's no way to rectify this given the index, because we're not going to go out for a referendum. At some point, unless there is a change in the property values, we're going to be facing, you know, our ability to pay is going to continually erode, our need to spend more money are going to continue to increase, and we only have to look at a lot of these really great initiatives, which I love them, and I agree with the comment that was made earlier, you know, they're all kind of like, would be a priority one to me, but obviously that can't be. So when we look at that formula for financial disaster in context of a strategic plan, is the and having been part of most of the strategic plan meetings, they're focused to me a little bit off center. And by that I mean the strategic plan for the fiscal health of a district, which is inexorably connected to the academic success of a district, has to realistically look at, is that strategic plan addressing how we're going to create a township? How are we going to create a tax base? What are we doing here that will enable us to kind of fulfill these curriculum and academic dreams that we're kind of putting in place now for the next 5 years? That goal is, in a chicken and egg situation to me, right up there at the top. Because if we don't cultivate a township that has the wherewithal to do what we want, we can dream all we want, and all of our dreams can be very well placed and very well footed, but they just will never be, and we're going to be in this kind of vicious spiral. Because the more successful you are, the more you eventually have the ability to do the things that bring success. The less successful you are, the reverse is also true. We see that in districts all over the country. This is not unique to us. So I say that only in when we talk about what our priorities are for our strategic plan. One of them, which just to me is never talked about, is what are we doing as a district with and without the township, because there's a combined effort to really shore up and cultivate a district that has a capability financially to do what we're doing, which means simply, how do we raise property values? In the formula that exists today, that's the beginning and the end of the conversation. How do we keep our property values from slipping, which they have been doing, and how do we actually turn that, as you put it, that ship around and start increasing our property values? If we don't honestly address that, then everything else is, no pun intended, academic.
No pun intended, really.
I challenge that.
I, just to speak on it, remember that recently we've had Cedarbrook Mall go through bankruptcy now, so their stock price is going down. In the future, you've got hopefully Cedarbrook Mall coming back.
That's one bankruptcy.
I'm sorry, Cheltenham. Yeah. Cheltenham Mall coming back.
But that's got housing developments coming. 5 years before that, or who knows, maybe 6 or 7 or 8 years.
Well, and many would argue that our job is higher test scores and lower tax rates will be the best that we can to support that.
Not to have a long conversation going from the tangent, but there are two issues with the township that I want to address briefly. One is that they're currently reviewing the draft zoning code, and the draft zoning code, high level, without having a long conversation, it really looks at largely a handful of properties that can be developed or redeveloped in the township. And we're down to about 5 or 10 of those. Almost all of those, except for one property up in the state, is owned for single-family housing. And a big question the township will address this tomorrow night a little bit at the Building and Zoning Committee is, with the draft zoning code, how much do we go forward and rezone those properties from mixed use with limited residential that will have two broad benefits? One is that the property values will be worth more than if you develop single-family housing on them in aggregate. And the second is there'll be less impact to the school district because there will be limited residential on those properties. The question is, for the township and the community as a whole is, do we change from becoming a bedroom community with these properties where there are neighbors nearby that don't want to see change and don't have commercial mixed use nearby? So that's one question is, when and how and if the draft zoning code plays out. And that'll take years for it to get, after it gets approved, which might take years, it'll take years as properties get developed to see their applications. But meanwhile, there are various development proposals that come in and out of the township, and with fewer and fewer opportunities to do meaningful development and increase tax base in those properties. The second is the EDU problem in the township. And the township is under a moratorium now where they effectively can do really no new development because of the lack of EDUs, meaning certain capacity. And that's a long-standing issue the township's grappling with the state with DEP, and also looking at in terms of replacing many parts of the sewer system, wastewater, and possibly selling the sewer system. So until they get more capacity to hook up more sewage to the sewer system, they effectively have very limited ability to even develop. And those from the township perspective, wearing my planner hat with the township as a citizen, are things that are really very critical to the township in terms of being able to increase new development that can benefit the school district. The other question with the existing tax base, largely residential, is how do we make it more attractive? And a lot of that is test scores, supply and demand, it's perception of the township, and you have this unfortunate situation where because taxes are high, even if things do get better perception-wise in the school district and test scores improve, there is this issue, taxes are being used, being punitive by many people. And people to some degree won't look here because of the combination of perception and actuality of how the school district is performing combined with the high real estate taxes. So that's my 5-minute summation.
I think to some degree it probably
is. That's true, but just to respond to that, we will never have more land than we have now. That is a finite problem. We could develop every piece of commercial property that is out there now to its maximum potential. It's assuming that could be done in the zoning community. That pales in comparison to what we would realize as a district if the individual properties that exist now with no further sales increased in value.
Sure.
So the question to me on the table is, and again, I put this in terms of our strategic plan, which is a long-range plan, is you have to start somewhere. It is a long-term problem, there's no question about it. We can't turn around this financial situation in a year any faster than we can turn around the academics of our student body in a year. But the point is to start and to point in a direction that has a chance of success. So when we talk about a strategic plan and we look at what's going to make this successful, it has got to address the ability of this township to look like a township that is successful. To look like a township that is, because lacking that, we're really kind of going to be spinning on wheels.
Let's table the rest of that until at least next month when we look at the long-term view of the budget itself. Mr. Moran.
Yeah, well, a lot of my questions have been answered. But one thing I have, maybe, I don't know if it's Ms. Michaels or Ms. Hayward, all right, for this year, we're budgeted our revenues $20.3 million from the state. You know, I think we've got, I don't know, $37 million of that. They're still discussing the budget. I mean, you know, what's going to happen? I mean, is it possible we may only get $17 million? I mean, is it we just can't project? Or, I mean, all of a sudden now we're $3 million short. I mean, or is this something that... I shouldn't worry about, or just throwing it out there.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a big number to me. It keeps me awake at night. Does anybody?
But they want you to see tonight, work? So we're going to lie to you and say, don't worry about it.
I mean, that was my.
And remember, I think the budget for this year was largely based on flat plus Pizzer's cake.
Right. Last year, based on a previous projection,
correct?
Right. I mean, like a crazy year. I just, it's a big number.
It is.
I'm just throwing that out there. Now, I am fortunate.
That
would be Julie's number. You can call your state senator.
Okay. What's your home? Yeah. All right. So I just want to have
Mr.
Thal.
Mr. Cole.
Two questions. One is, I believe it started to be addressed, and I'm just going to get clarification and see if we can expand it, is the idea of possibly taking some educational time, or typical day school time of school, where teachers are there and school's in session. And instead of, we do it now already, we pull them out to send teachers to conferences, which has value. So the question is get more professional development time. Can we possibly do that during the existing school day, and in lieu of, not the conferences are bad, or maybe in addition to say teachers' conferences, say we're now going to basically pull out 10 teachers or a cohort of teachers, bring in substitutes, and then do additional professional development to basically increase the capacity and time to do professional development with or without issues around the teachers' contract negotiations?
Yes, I think, and this is sometimes a double-edged sword of this process, right, is that in terms of what we would call a business day, there are so many activities taking place throughout the course of the district, and so many buildings who are using business days that you have an excessive amount of individuals being pulled from their classroom for those 4 hours or for the day in substitution, which has a big impact on the continuity of the instructional practice. And having the experience of teachers who eventually say, listen, enough is enough. This is the seventh time that you pulled me out of my class, significantly cheaper, but it begins to interrupt the continuity. So I think that one of the ways to offset that is if we can embed some of that within the professional development calendar. For example, if we can agree to, or some districts where districts say every third Friday is a half a day, and that time is going to be dedicated to some professional learning experience. I came from a district, taught in a district, and attended that school where every Wednesday, students had a half a day in the springtime. And part of that was an opportunity to really push in. But then you have to make sure that you are meeting state statute in terms of the total number of minutes you have in the classroom. But there are opportunities to look at the calendar, determine how many instructional hours we need based on state mandate, and say we're willing to and have the capability to say, instead of these sessions, we can decide once a month on a Friday. That gives us 8 or 9 additional professional learning opportunities where we have a happy day to do that. So that could be part of the conversation moving forward.
And I think for us, my same question very briefly, I think at one point this district did get out early every Wednesday, and I think it was at one point for professional development.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every
Wednesday is an early dismissal.
But it's not.
Once a month. And my second question is, I just want to raise the issue to see if we can talk about a future meeting, was the all-day workshop that happened about 2 years ago with the former superintendent.
I'm sorry, the all-day?
All-day workshop, okay. Or retreat,
okay.
That the board had, which I invited myself to before I was a board member, where they looked at, and it was a quick process, they looked at about 40 to 50 different items, and they prioritized them in terms of short, medium, long-term that were cost-saving measures. And that work was done. I'm just curious if we can give this a go.
Actually, I would disagree and tell you that was pie in the sky.
Okay.
The things that people threw on that list, which I wouldn't even have put on the list to think about, was there's no feasible way that could happen.
Okay.
I mean, everyone threw out anything from, can we put 40 kids in a classroom and how much would that save us? They threw out, if we outsource everything, what would that look like? I don't mind engaging in cost-cutting, realistic conversations, but the list I saw that was thrown up, I don't think that made sense. Half of those things would have been impossible. I think people were charged to say, if you had your cake and eat it too, what would that look like? Oh, let's eliminate half of all the instructional aides. That would save us $640,000. What if we outsource all of our cleaning services? What would that look like for us? What if we reduce the number of hours that teachers did this? I think that done correctly, there are ways in which we can do that. But looking at that list, I'm not sure why I would even, it was like a wish list.
Sure.
That really, for many of them, there's no way under current educational systems half of those things would fly, just wouldn't work.
Okay.
Across the board. But I think that I wouldn't mind having a conversation realistically with the board in terms of what can we think critically about. But throwing out if secretaries came in every other day, how much would that save us? And that got onto the list. And I'm like, really? That's impossible. There's just
I suggested every kid coming in every other day.
Yeah, right. But there were some other things where I'm like, that could do that. So I don't mind that exercise if we are very deliberate about it and it doesn't become a pie in the sky list.
Okay, thank you.
My turn. Well, that was an exercise by our questionable former.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some board members who are no longer with us who were very keen on some cuts. I know that for a fact. And I won't support most of the stuff that's on there because I did see that.
Mm-hmm.
I did see that list. That was something that Matt worked hard on. He was trustee assistant at the time. I think at some point in time we should have a budget workshop. I think that should probably be, I think it should be in June and pointed at 17-18 and not 6 weeks out. I like the discussion when we get closer to the end of the year. I don't want to have a discussion in May about graduation rates if we've known certain things throughout the course of the year that didn't serve us well at the end of last year. Now, in terms of the budget,
I would love to have a conversation in August with the board to begin very deliberate conversation if we want to attack and address some cost-cutting measures. But to throw out, let's eliminate all busing and put that on a list and say, well, we'll just bus special ed kids, right? And then say, oh, we can set the district $1.2 million.
Yeah. Having our kids walking some of these rural roads.
Yeah. Wouldn't work. Sorry, but yes.
No, that's okay. That's how I'd like to see us do it.
Yes.
I would like to request that, but I'd like to see it happen at a different point of the year.
Yes.
In terms of this budget, the figure that you project for 2016-2017 for benefits, is that what it's going to cost us for benefits? That's not like a projection to match the increase in salary.
It is aligned with salaries. Obviously, your biggest hit is teasers.
Yep.
So for every position that we talked about, adding or sustaining, we have to take that into account. Our first look rates for healthcare was 7.8%. So
that's 7.8% increase?
Yes. That was our first look rates. We have not gotten our second look rates yet. Trend is about 8.4 right now, so we're coming under trend, but still high.
Used to be higher.
So yes, that is, those okay. are the two okay. hefty pieces in benefits.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's 70% of our expenditures fall under this too.
The PESER spike is going from 25.8 to 30.03. And there's no way to get around that.
So let's have all the taxpayers write a thank you letter to the leadership in Harrisburg who continue to allow and encourage this.
That goes all the way back to Ridge. He's the one that screwed
up. We can just talk about what they have or haven't done in the last year. Okay, so the budget, I thank you for your work on this, and I appreciate the explanations. I think that the administration's wish list is out there, and I'm not sure how much study and comparison, unless that's something that the board wants to have, we need to do. Prioritization, yes. But as has been said, I mean, this list are things that probably should have been phased in over the last 5 to 10 years. And we can't obviously squeeze it all into 1 year, but the more time I spend talking to people and looking at things, my 2 years on the board, I've learned an amazing amount of things about the deficit approach to education. With our budget, I would love to see us, I am a proponent of seeing what we can find in terms of finite costs. I'd love to see it. You and I have talked about that. I've talked with Napoleon about this. I think that's our greatest hope at trying to move from 2.4 closer back to where I'd like to see it. Zero would be great, and that may not be a reality. I'm hopeful that 2.4 isn't there because we are under tremendous pressure. Our community is under tremendous pressure. I wholeheartedly support that. But in terms of the fund balance, I also want us to continue to treat that with care and with the understanding that while the people who run Harrisburg into the ground and the state don't see the importance of fund balances and continue to have one deficit year after another, $2 billion is the structural deficit right now. They also would like to see school districts get rid of their fund balances because I don't know why. What I'm trying to say is there's a number in there somewhere that we need to hold on to for best practices because these bond sellers on Wall Street, if we stay where we are, we haven't been hit as hard as the state. The state has had hit after hit after hit in their bond rating. We had a decrease in our bond rating last year. We dropped from AAA to AA. Or triple B to double B, because of what the state has done. It had nothing to do with our conduct, but as they continue to run things in our budget, what I've heard, and this may not be true, but it's not a concern to the leadership of Harrisburg and the House and Senate. I've heard that the best we may get is an 18-month budget, and it's not likely to come until after the election, because of course the priority of state government is keeping yourself reelected. So I think that we can assume that we're not going to get that $20 million and just be prepared for it. There's other things that are coming that aren't budget related that we also need to keep our eyes on. They're also trying to push us back in referendum into the budget deal that comes in the fall. So that's all. I'm sorry, it's more a speech than a question or anything like that. I'd like to see us really focus on what can we spend down to a certain level, not going below that, trying to keep our taxes within check. Recognizing that we have a lot of ground to cover and to come out with that balance. And
just one thing about the fund balance. And this is something that Kara can keep us apprised of. One of the ways we've been able to save a lot of money over the years is the size of your fund balance in proportion to your expenditures to your budget has to do with how much what you pay in insurance when you go out for bonds and also what the bonds will cost you. So there's a certain amount of money that you save, and when you're doing a lot of capital projects that we're doing, constantly ordering bonds and getting new bonds and refunding bonds and things like that, that's a factor, and it's a, it can be a considerable factor. So I would just make sure we have a cushion there so that we don't get, you know, take it out of one pocket and, or put it in one pocket and take it out of the other.
That's our rating as well.
Yeah, well, that's a function. Yes.
That's what I was trying to say. Exactly. We can't.
You said it wrong.
I said it wrong.
For me, one of the things that I would like to see, and again, we'll continue to come back to this in about a month, is will we be able to see, because I love having the buckets of ongoing spend initiatives, both, can we see dollar amounts with all of these, and we can, you know, work on how to,
Yep, we'll do that. Because one of the things that you're not seeing here are the additional staffing that is in this, that is in this budget for a number of key areas. And then, like many of you have said, and you just said, we have a lot of ground to cover. The board can determine that right now, those four or five, six positions that you're proposing in this budget, you're not getting them. We're going to think differently about how we phase it in. And I will give you a rationale about the urgency of now. And then you will tell me, we appreciate that. Go back and sharpen your pencil and we'll phase that in at another time. I will throw achievement data at you to make you think more critically about the urgency of now, and you will come back and say, we appreciate it, go sharpen your pencil. So I'll give you my rationale, and then we'll see, obviously, with the understanding that we want to be mindful about the tax burden on the community. And with that, I do not mind recommending spending some of our fund dollars to get me what I'm looking for.
If we've got these one-time things,
if it's a one-time, if it's a one-time thing for me to do that, it's not a reoccurring process.
Thank you.
Can we go out to public and then move? Yes, sir. How are you?
Hi, Nigel Blower, Elkins Park. Spankles, could you put the chart that has the comparison this year and next year? Yeah. So. It's not, maybe I'm misunderstanding this, it's not clear to me that there's any assumption of any funding in the 16-17 budget to cover the initiatives that the superintendent has kind of outlined in qualitative form. Is it in the other purchased services, 500?
One of the tasks that I've tried to do starting last year when I took over this position is realigning spend the budget,
okay.
Not budgeting off the budget, because I think that was one of the things that people were seeing, that there was gaps in some of our budget versus spend, that there were big gaps in, you know, balances at the end of the year. So one of the things that I'm doing is I'm trying to realign actual trends to what we're spending. So where that is highlighted probably the biggest is you're going to look at salaries, and it might not make sense to you on what was budgeted in 15-16 compared to what I'm budgeting in 16-17. That number is not fluxing to the level that you would think that it would flux. Reason being is again, I'm trying to realign actual spend with what's budgeted and get those numbers reapportioned. So part of the process with the budget process is redirecting those funds and kind of moving them around. So all the initiatives that we did discuss is included in this budget. Last presentation I did, I showed a budget gap. And part of the increases that we have obligation-wise and part of the new initiatives were included in that. We eliminated that budget gap with the tax increase at this point to have this discussion today. So again, from the discussion that you're hearing, we're going back and we're doing some more analysis and bringing it back to the table on what's priority and what's not. But the initiatives that were addressed on the other slides are all embedded into this budget.
So, can I ask a follow-up?
Go ahead.
So I very much appreciate that. So is the 2.4% increase primarily driven by these initiatives, or is it driven by Cedarbrook reconstruction, or is it a mix of the two?
It's a mishmash. This budget is, there's a lot of moving targets. We have Cedarbrook coming on board. We have the new initiatives that we talked, and
Dr. Marseille alluded to the fact that there are new positions in the budget, and with a new position, it's just about $40,000. It's teachers, it's healthcare. So that piece of it is embedded too. It's the technology initiative. It's ensuring that we have maintenance embedded enough to address the master plan that comes out. The strategic plan initiatives, putting some kind of dollar amount or placeholding that, and all the professional learning. So when you look at maybe from last year, the 300s, the focus was a little bit different on the 300s, on what the spend was, and that was redirected into other areas. It's not clear because of how we redirected the funding by seeing this big jump, but you see in 500 and 200, those are big areas. And they do address some of the initiatives that were in there, as well as contractual increases.
Right. But it would be fair to say that even if we did none of those initiatives, there would still be an increase because there's other things outside of the initiatives that's driving this 2.4%.
Yes.
But even if you laser prioritize it, you can't address the whole 2.4%.
Correct.
Right? You can address a part of it.
Fred Milbert, Albany's Park. I may have asked this last time, but I'm still confused. You have $83 million in local taxes in 15-16, and it's going to $89, which is 8% increase.
Yes. This gets asked every year. Okay, here's why. I'll regurgitate it. It's fine. Because the board asked last year, too. Right now in the budget process, the homestead funds have not been certified, nor are they released. So we cannot account and assume that we're getting those homestead funds. And part of the calculation for taxes, when you're doing your whole tax calculations, you back out the gaming money that gets then distributed or the property tax allocation from the state. It then gets moved down into the state. That's why you're seeing a drop of the $3 million in state funding from 15-16 to 16-17. Right now in the preliminary phase, we have to include it in our local revenue because the funds have not been certified. So it will then, once the funds are certified, it will then get shifted back down into the state funding. So there's $3.6 million that's embedded in local that is really gaming money accounted for last year. But the practice right now, in going through prelim and dealing with the state reporting, you cannot, they don't allow you to account for the gaming money until it's certified. So you have to put it somewhere and placehold it in your budget. It is place held in the tax line item in local.
So if you put another column there, the state funding that you're estimating is $20.6 million approximately, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And the other one drops to, so is the difference between local and that subtraction of that number 2.4%?
No. There are some slight increases in local revenue that we've discussed in previous presentations. I looked at, there was some increase in real estate taxes without a tax increase based on our collection rate, same with the delinquent taxes. There was also, looking at trend, there was some slight increase in growth in EIT and I believe our local service tax. So I believe when I initially presented budget back in October-ish, I showed that without anything happening, we're experiencing about an $800,000 increase in revenue based on me looking at trends and reanalyzing budget versus receipt.
So, thank you, Kate. Now, everyone keeps saying fund balance. How much is the fund balance?
Currently, it's $16.4 million.
And what is a good ratio between fund balance and that fund balance have other people? Rating agency look at it. So how does that get, what's the ratio of this on expenditures, revenues, what?
I think it's overall budget versus where you're at with your unassigned. There's different assignments or classifications to fund balance. So primarily when I'm on a rating call, they're asking about our unassigned fund balance. That means that money's free and clear and you can use it for whatever issues arise.
So what's our unassigned fund balance?
$8 million right now.
And that's the ratio. So what's the ratio that we're looking at doing?
Is that good or bad?
Yeah. It's good.
There's a statutory limit.
Of 8%, yes.
So you can't go higher than that?
Fund balance is about $100,000.
And what's the other annual
I'm sorry?
What's the other cap? 8 million of unassigned, what's the other?
There's assigned for building improvements of 1.6. There's committed funds, which those have to be undone by board action. There has been a reserve building for users of 1.5. And then capital projects for 4.4. And then you have something called non-spendable fund balance. So you kind of have to pull that back because those are funds you can't touch. It's inventory and prepaid items.
Which that really subtracts a million out of it.
Yeah. So 15.4 would be what, if you want to consider liquid to a degree, of what could be used.
Third thing is, I'm going to a township meeting tomorrow regarding a few nonprofits that are suggesting they're going to be pilots paying under lower taxes. And I asked our tax commissioner, tax collector, Steve Burns, how does that negotiate it? And does it work with the township, with the school district? So do you work with the township working out a pilot, or who does it? Because there's a lot of money that's, if you're not doing it. So what happens to it? For example, the John Jay Institute is trying to buy the building on Woods Oak Road. They're saying they're going to do a pilot. Now they're spending $21,000, currently it's $21,000 in real estate taxes, which is 16 and 17 schools. You negotiate, township negotiates, what's the process?
I believe it would be a part of the township.
Mm-hmm. They don't think so.
Right, I agree. I'm pretty sure that the township does it. Not in a beneficiary way, the township looks out for themselves and just negotiates on behalf of the township.
Yeah, you're not getting money.
Right, it's you, right. Well,
I mean, that's the point.
That's not negotiation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you're losing, and well, there's also one.
The liaison committee for the township when we meet, yeah, with that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, that's essential that you discuss the fact that when you're a pilot, you also.
Absolutely.
Five times more than they're doing.
The issue has always been that we don't provide services. Right. And so we really have not had much of a leg to stand on because the township provides, you know, trash and collection, whatever it is.
I don't really care.
Well, I'm just saying,
Well, I listen to everybody talk, and it's clear how dire the situation is in terms of revenue. And so I just wanted to relate this to the negotiations that you're participating in. You do realize that over 40% of your staff is currently earning over $107,000. And the balance of power, that's the maximum salary. Over 40% of the staff is at that point. The power between the employees and the employer has changed over the years to the point where, and I don't want this to be abused because I was around when it was abused, but the board really does now have much more power than the union. There was a point where the board kind of had to make sure that the union agreed to the contract, otherwise it'd be on strike. It has been somewhat changed now so that the ability of the union to strike is rather limited, and the board really now is in a power position, not to be abused, but the board is in a power position, and I would hope that when the board is negotiating, that they will not be negotiating in a vacuum. You've already heard all the expenditures that you need for education. The amount of money that you increase in salary does not, within reason obviously, does not really buy you anything in terms of better education. And once salaries reach a reasonable point, then $107,000 I think is reasonable, I think we have to start balancing our priorities in terms of what money do we need to improve the quality of our schools. Versus how much we're going to be putting into salary increases. And that's a tough one to do, and I guess what I'm trying to say is the mental state of the board as they enter into negotiations
is critical. As Dr. Massey did song and dance before, you know, they're going to say this, they can say that, and it's a game. But the bottom line is, I think the board should be aware of, before you spend another 20 cents in additional salaries, what your obligations are, and compare that to what your revenues are going to be, and let that influence the decisions you make in the negotiations. Unfortunately, too often negotiations are done in a vacuum. And every good, everybody knows good teachers can't be paid enough. I mean, that's a given. We know that. But we have to be bound by the amount of money that we have. And so I would urge the board to go into negotiations with a mindset that you are actually in control. Salaries for many employees are quite adequate. Rather not adequate at the lower end, I might add. You might want to look at that end, really. Not at 42,000. That might want to look at. But in light of what I do not want to hear, because I will scream if I hear another fool say that, we got to raise the taxes because of the contract which you entered into and agreed to. So don't enter into an agreement that's going to bind you into tax increases. And they're then going to have to say, well, gee, well, hands are tied. You tied them. So please, you're in control. Know what you are obligating the district to. And keep in mind where salaries are. You know, we're not back at salaries of $8,000. I mean, they're reasonably decent levels. So I would just urge you to see what your expenditures are at the moment before you get into salary increases, and negotiate accordingly. Thank you.
Just one question.
There's always someone.
There's one question with you.
I will ask, because there are two board members who have one more question. Are they questions that we can take offline? Okay, Mr. Rackow.
Yeah, just a quick question. There are some additional salaries, some additional positions that we have been talking about.
Yes.
But there are also several positions that have been unfilled for a while, so that money was budgeted. What happens, just to explain what happens to that in terms of last year's budget, because we haven't been spending it, and hopefully soon we will be spending it.
Well,
they're still in the budget.
Yeah, it's still, right. Still in the budget.
Savings. So if there's any type of surplus, it comes off of that. But then when you have situations where you're presented with possibly having to fill a position that's not budgeted, then we can utilize the funds that were not used from other positions that were unfilled. So we've talked about that through this year, and that's happened in some instances. But ultimately, you know, if it's status quo across the board and a position remains unfilled that we anticipated we're going to fill, then it's going to be a surplus on that line item.
Right, that will increase the fund balance this year.
Yes.
Ms. Haywood.
So as we talk about revenues, you know, I know we talked about the foundation at some point. Have we explored alternative revenue for the district? In any kind of meaningful way, you know, with the foundation being in place? Just a question.
No, I haven't looked at any significant forms of alternative revenue. I know that came up as a conversation earlier this year in terms of, is that going to be a goal for the superintendent to look into alternative funding sources, but that has not been
part of that. I just, that was just a question in terms of, I know the umbrella of the foundation was kind of tasked to do that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I'm not sure. I do know that there recently, there's been opportunities for us to take a look at are we seeking out grants that we might be, are we missing grants that we might be eligible for because we're not going out and doing the search? So we've been in conversation with several organizations that are helping us think through that process. And you'd be surprised, it's like a scholarship search, you qualify for much more money than you think,
right.
And people are not sending in those requests. Mm-hmm. So that's an area we're going to look into, and then obviously the foundation is a larger conversation, which plays into some of our long-term strategic goals in terms of will they be a key partner in other organizations in around that fifth that fifth strand, which is communication, engagement, and community.
So moved.
I just got to suggest one thing. Actually, it was Fred's idea. One of the things about the foundation, which I've asked the foundation, is the incredible alumni because we've done a horrendous job in soliciting, going after them. Because we have incredible wealthy, well-known people, but I'm sure if they were approached, they'd be willing to be involved in some kind of fundraising. And I understand when I talk to the foundation people, they can't get access to the alumni yet.
It's not that simple.
Who shot John? There was a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
Second.
Excellent. All in favor?
All right.
Move on to the next meeting.
Agenda bills.
This concludes this school board recording. This recording is copyright by KD3HW and is released for free distribution under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivation 3.0 United States license. Podcast sounds courtesy of freesound.org. See the acknowledgement page of the podcast website. Thank you for downloading us and have a great day.